Hi, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired, break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Welcome, everybody, to the We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Woohoo! Yay! Today in the studio, we have Debbie Unnerman. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
First, I'd like to thank Dean Hires and Pete McAlack of Sage Presence for their generous monetary donation to my podcast. Dean Hires and Pete McAlack have also, and I'll include in the show notes, their podcast episodes. Dean and Pete are consultants, speakers, trainers, and coaches. They do skill building and specialize in helping business professionals move forward, build business, and work more effectively and productively with each other. They formed Sage Presence in 2001, and they've got a great newsletter that they just started up in 2017. And they also came out with a new book called Winning AEC Interviews. And the AEC stands for Architecture, Engineering, and Construction. We'll have lots of information about them in the show notes. And in the meantime, we would like to focus in on our guest today, Debbie Unnerman, who's a clinical hypnotherapist, author, mediator, speaker, and game inventor. She likes to help people see things clearly in some non-traditional ways. In her book, Talking to Myself, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head, Debbie describes an array of characters she says we all have rattling around in our brains, such as the judge, the rebel, the victim, and maybe even Ms. and Mr. Perfect. As a master alchemist and trainer, she's been delving inside people's heads for the last 34 years. She's achieved proven results with clients suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, sexual abuse, depression, codependencies, phobias, anxiety, lack of direction, sex and relationship issues, and much, much more. But even though she can help you work through your issues, she's very interested in creating a new paradigm of playing through your issues, which is what she's doing with hundreds of people who are playing her transformational board games of clarity and Satori, the game of radical forgiveness. Welcome to our program, Debbie. Wow, that sounds amazing.
Thank you.
I'd love to play your game.
Satori. Oh, my God. I would love to have you play it. Will you ever be in Atlanta?
Yeah. So Debbie's Skyped in from Atlanta, Georgia. We'll have to set up a trip sometime.
Maybe I'll have to see Minneapolis.
Yeah. Have you ever been here?
No, I haven't.
Ah, okay. Well, come during the summer or spring or fall.
I know. I don't want to be there in the winter, but I do want to see the Mary Tyler Moore statue and throw my hat in the air.
Oh, excellent. That would be lovely. Terrific. All right. So, yeah, I've had kind of a crazy day, technical issues. And so it's just been working through kind of frustration. And the good news is I got a podcast request. So I'm doing that coming up. My first podcast interview with somebody else. I'm kind of looking forward to that. Yeah. Oh, all right. So my day has been kind of frustrating, but then it's also mixed with good news and then my excitement to talk with you tonight and work with Mike here because we always learn so much from our guests. And we like to chat about it too after we're done. How are you feeling today? How's your day been? How's your Monday been?
I can definitely relate to technical issues. It's been one thing after another over about the last 2 weeks. If it's not the computer, it's the television or the telephone was today. So I totally understand. I've been talking to India, I think, more than I've been talking to anybody that I know.
Yeah, well, in India, they seem to know a lot about how to solve our technology issues in the United States.
Yes, thank God for them, yes.
Yeah, the same with in Ukraine.
And Philippines, yes.
That's right. All right, so great. Now that we've checked in with each other, I think we're ready to have this wonderful experience of connecting on a deeper level with each other. So I was cramming in reading your book this weekend, but it's not that kind of a book. Talking to myself and learning to love the voices in your head is, you are a wonderful writer. I just was loving all the stories that I love the way you laid out the book. I love the way you put the stories together and weaved in some, I just felt like I could hear you talking to me.
That is how I write. It's my voice. And if I ever put it on tape, I feel like I've got to be the one speaking it because it has to be my voice.
Yeah, it's, yeah, very, very much so. And you and I met at the Mastermind to Millions conference in Phoenix, Arizona, in the whirlpool in the evenings at the end of each
day. Oh, good.
I'm
glad you brought that up. I wasn't sure if I should. Under the cactus, under the giant cactus.
Oh,
yes.
Wasn't that beautiful?
Oh, my God. And the moonlight, too. Yes, it was beautiful.
Yeah, there's nothing like having good conversations in a beautiful environment. In a pool.
Yeah, while the jets are massaging your back. Yeah.
That's right, and you're outside. Oh, I love that. All right, so, and are you planning to start some mastermind groups?
I would like to. I came up with one that I realize is actually one of my fortes that I've been doing for years, but had never really thought of it as something to offer. It was always a little teeny part of my teaching when I would be doing trainings for other alchemical hypnotherapists. And I would tell them that just before they're ready to graduate, I would kind of break it to them right on the spot without them being able to think much about it, that the best way for them to be able to get clients would be for them to speak. And so I put a camera up and a microphone in their hand, had them stand up and make a 4-minute speech in front of the camera and their classmates. And, you know, people get their fear and want to run out of the room, and we all work through it. And what happens is the work I do helps people go through their fears. And fear of public speaking is actually right up there on the list. Higher than going to a dentist.
Yeah.
It is people's biggest fear. So the service that I can provide, not only the fact that I am a pretty good speaker and writer, is that I also have good video equipment and know how to use it.
Yeah.
And, you know, because holding the microphone is part of what people don't know how to do too. Do you notice how people wave the microphone or move away from it and you can't hear them? So I like to teach people about speaking, you know, not just to be a public speaker, but what if they ever have a chance to get in front of a microphone? I have a chance to show them what they look like, let them hear what their voice sounds like, and then help them go through the block that they feel while they're up there and their knees are knocking.
Yes.
Or they feel like throwing up or running away.
Right.
So that's the offering that I would like to make for people. I want to do a mastermind where I help people get up in front of a camera and then be able to go through whatever the fear is while they're up there through an alchemical hypnotherapy session or talking about those different voices that come up.
Yes.
You know, the performance anxiety have they ever tried to do something on stage when they were in a school play and they, you know, lost their costume or tripped or, you know, forgot their lines
some
or
sort
cried
of big
or,
mishap that stuck with
right,
them. Yeah,
right.
That makes so much sense. That's awesome. That's a great way to use the mastermind group concept. And to have a clinical hypnotherapist and master alchemist kind of help people understand their inner voices, I think that's amazing. So before, so the audience can get to know a little bit about you, you wrote a wonderful little snippet of growing up with your grandmother in chapter two of your book. Everybody's chapter two is called Everybody's Talking at Me, External Characters. But before you do that, could you tell us what a master alchemist is?
Yes, I should start with what an alchemical hypnotherapist is, because there are very few master alchemists. To get to the level of mastery, there are really only very few of us. I've been given that title because I have written a book about it, and I've been doing it for 34 years. So most people who do alchemical hypnotherapy are alchemists, or maybe they just call themselves hypnotherapists or clinical hypnotherapists or alchemical hypnotherapists. But the idea of hypnosis is something that scares a lot of people because of the way that it's been depicted in the media, mostly as if we have a chance to have our mind controlled by someone who tells us to look into their eyes. And really, it's Hollywood. That is Hollywood. That does not happen. You will not do anything that you wouldn't do anyway under hypnosis. And the thing is, to be hypnotized feels so good. A lot of people block themselves from even going into hypnosis because they don't want to lose control, and it's really, they're depriving themselves of a beautiful experience. In fact, there's a great joke, okay, I'll say right off that it is a joke. I don't know if it's ever really happened, but this is how the joke goes. There's a hypnotherapist, you know, like say in Las Vegas or somewhere on stage, and he gets somebody, one of his subjects, up there on the stage, and he can't snap them out of it. They're up there and they're like, you know, tranced out, and he's freaking out. He's going, is there anybody in the audience that can bring this person to? And somebody walks up on stage, whispers in the subject's ears, and they open their eyes. And the hypnotherapist on stage goes, what did you say? How did you do that? He said, I told her that if she doesn't come back now, she'll never be able to go back there again. Because that's how good it feels.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's really a
that's
natural
funny.
State of relaxation. Yeah, good. I'm yeah. glad I could tell a joke. So, you know, so hypnotherapy is really just a way that we go into the alpha state, which is where we go when we start falling asleep, when we daydream, when we take long drives and miss our exit and we realize we've been under highway hypnosis.
Yeah, everybody can relate to that, where you, where you don't even remember how you got back to your house.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, the horse goes back to the barn.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It just knows how to get there.
I relate to this in meditation, where you go into a deeper state.
Right.
Yeah, but it's
right.
not sleeping. It's staying. You're still alert.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If someone said to you, Nancy, you know, I need you, you'd be right there. You would just kind of be like, oh, don't bother me, because I'm in a very peaceful state, like I was just saying about that joke, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to come back. You feel too good.
Yeah.
So in that state, that, you know, that natural state that is part of our everyday life, it's just a different brainwave state. You know, we pass through it on our way to sleep, you know, into deep sleep. When we're there, just like when you wake up and you can kind of remember your dreams, and then all of a sudden you can't anymore, you know, when you come completely back into life, it's that place where you still are kind of in the dream world, and you're, you know, you're remembering, oh, I was just doing that, and my dog who died was with me, or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where we can have those memories come up, those we can kind of manipulate the world
in a positive way.
Yes, by our imagination.
Yeah.
You know, when we dream, look at what our imagination is doing.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's places that we couldn't even imagine.
Right.
But to use the imagination on purpose, then we have the world at our fingertips. We can use that positive force to imagine the good instead of what we're normally doing in everyday life, which is imagining the bad, ruminating about, oh my God, what if?
Yeah.
You know, or, oh, I should have told him such and such when he did that to me. You know, we're either thinking of the past or thinking about the future. We're hardly ever where we're supposed to be in the present. So if we go into that place consciously, so we're in our subconscious, but our consciousness is with us. In our dreams, it's not. That's why we come back and we go, what was that dream again? I wish I could remember. But when you go into hypnosis, you can remember everything.
And so you have a sense of control.
Totally. You are totally in control. The difference with alchemy is that we don't want to just give people a lot of positive suggestions and have them go very deep so those suggestions get taken, like, you know, things like, what's his name, Smalley, you know, on TV. I am good enough. I am smart enough. And people like me.
Stuart Smalley, right.
You know,
yeah,
little,
yeah, that, right, that, right, that, right. Yeah. Those affirmations.
Right, right. You know, so a hypnotherapist in a traditional sense may give you affirmations like that. It may be they put you into a deep state and they tell you you are able to remember everything that you need to remember for this test. It's easy for you to process all the information and retain it. You know, it's giving us all this positive suggestion. But what I'm doing with a client, what we do with alchemy, is we say, let's go back to the first time you had problems taking a test. You know, or maybe we'd say you were on stage and something went wrong. So you go back to that time.
Like the life-changing moments.
Yes, those ones that, well, sometimes they're life-changing and they stick in our craw and we remember them forever, like
yeah.
If we were embarrassed on stage.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes there is something that we don't even remember, but it still lives in the subconscious mind that we can go to and retrieve when we're in that relaxed state.
So right. Because some things are buried deep within our...
Yes.
Our psyche. Yeah.
And what I like to tell people is, okay, we all know computers these days, right? You know, we used to have to do DOS and it's still it's a little easier to Google. It'll kind of, if you make a mistake with spelling, it'll say, do you mean, but with DOS, you know, if anyone remembers back then in the 80s and early 90s, you had to tell the computer exactly what you wanted it to bring up. If you were wrong with one keystroke, you were not going to get it. But that's, you know, you could say human beings recreated the brain as a computer. Obviously, it can't be as good as the real brain is. But we can do a similar thing.
Yeah.
If we give the right instructions, it opens that file in our brain.
Yep.
By telling it, so now I want you to go back to the first time that you were embarrassed on stage or you had trouble taking a test, you know, and so your brain opens up that file.
Sure.
It goes right to it if you give the right instructions. So if it's something that isn't too unpleasant, it'll probably go right to it. If it's something that is more deeply buried, you know, like abuse, trauma, especially sexual abuse, it may go around and around and around till it's finally cajoled to get to that moment. But, you know, the brain will never bring something up if you're not ready to see it and have it revealed.
I think that's the beauty of how our brain works and our soul together to, like, reveal things as we're ready for them.
That's right.
It's That's really great. Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
The deeper you go into this, the more you just are kind of amazed at how that all is working so perfectly, really, with how it takes, you know, our mind, you know, works for our benefit.
Yes. And so I hope that I haven't gone off, you know, down a rabbit hole as far as answering your question. But that is, when we do alchemical hypnotherapy, we are searching for the root cause of something. We're not just saying, now you can do better. We're saying, let's go back to when it really was bad so we can pull that out. And now we can implant through the imagination a better memory.
Yes.
So let's say you got embarrassed in front of a class because you forgot your lines and you froze on stage. Now we can change that in any way that you want. And we can make it that, let's say, you know, somebody off stage whispers your lines to you and you remember them with a cue, a little cue, you know, or maybe you make a joke and everybody laughs at you. I mean, you know, like laughs at you and you like it and become a comedian, you know, because you got to laugh.
Yeah.
You know, we can make it however a person would like it to be. Or we could maybe say, hey, you don't have to do that school play at all. You know, your mother made you, but now you don't have to. And you can just stay home safe and you can just watch all the other kids. You know, it can be whatever you want.
You create
That's
a more
where the
pleasant.
Imagination comes in. Yes.
Yeah, right. So you can overcome the terrible, awful things. So how come there aren't more alchemists around?
Well, it's very interesting because, so like I said, I've been doing it 34 years. I started in 1983, almost exactly, because it was October, actually. We were very, at that time, if you recall, the word alchemy just did not come out in the vernacular at all. I thought it was a crazy term, but my teacher said, nope, that's what it's called. That's what, you know, his inner guides told him it's supposed to be called. He invented it. And he kind of channeled it, and that's what they said it was.
Became like popular in the 80s, right?
Well,
I remember reading about it.
It began, the word alchemy or alchemist started catching on. There's books called The Alchemist.
Yeah.
Deepak Chopra has books about alchemists. There was a band called Acoustic Alchemy. All of a sudden, everybody's talking alchemy. And it took 30 years to catch up to the fact that transformation, alchemical transformation, is really something very natural in the world. So what's happening also simultaneously is that new brain research is beginning to show that all the techniques that we have been doing intuitively, but you could say from the instruction of the channeling that my teacher got and put this process together, the new brain research is showing that traditional therapy, talk therapy, doesn't work. It happens in the cerebral cortex, and you can't change the cerebral cortex with the cerebral cortex. You need to go deeper to where things got programmed in, or maybe even deeper into the fear brain that makes us just want to run away. And we have to make people safe and then go back to why they weren't safe. And then what we say is they're prefrontal cortex or the cerebral cortex can come back online.
Yeah.
Then they can think clearly. So all this time that therapists have been doing the same thing for so many years, talking, and people have to keep going to therapy. You know, in Freud's day, it was 7 days a week. Now in like New York City, if you listen to Woody Allen, it's 5 days a week. I think that New York City is the stronghold of traditional Freudian psychoanalysis, and they still do go see their, I think if you live in New York, you kind of have to.
Well, it seems like everybody's moved into the yoga and the meditation movement, where it's become so much more popular, you know.
Yes.
It's gotten out of the hippie stage. You know, when it came into play in the 60s and 70s.
Hmm? It's become mainstream now to go to yoga or Pilates. And the other thing about, you said, meditation is they're now calling it mindfulness.
Right. Yeah, because so it's more, the change in the language has made it more plausible for people to not get caught up in like the religious how it's misinterpreted, really, in those of us who are practice a formal religion. We, the language to certain things as like a preventive measure or that blocks the entry into really exploring something more in a lot more detail. Last year, was it? Almost a year since I've become a yoga teacher.
Oh.
And mindfulness meditator. But I've been doing yoga for, 15 years. And meditation, I've gone through like year-long programs where I met with, we would go through a tape series every week. So it was a guided meditation, but it was through an instructor through a tape. And so we did it as a group. But I found that I was gravitating toward something that was like unlodging a deeper part of my brain so that it could change the wiring in a way that I could feel more freed up in the world. And not so, because if our body remembers things,
mm-hmm.
right, and it's locked in our memories in the limbic system.
And our bodies, right? The limbic part of the brain and our bodies.
Yeah.
Literally body memories. Sometimes you press a part of the body and you get the memory. Have you ever cut yourself shaving? For women, it would be their legs. For men, it would be their face. When you get to that place where you cut yourself, your body remembers to be very careful and you don't want to slice it again the way you did once, right?
Right.
It's a body memory.
Yes.
The body has, those cells have a memory, and the limbic system of the brain are where the memories go back to that are more emotional in content.
Yeah. Like I went to a massage therapist who's a spiritual healer before I had, so I had two hip surgeries 2 months apart. And I had, so she did some work on me before I went in, and then I blessed the surgeon and the nursing care staff, and sent them all positive energy and good thoughts and everything. And then my spiritual healer and massage therapist also then worked with my body to, she said that, she could feel that there was just a lot of, activity going on in that. She just could pick up the deeper level of energy in the inner workings of the body. And so she pulled out like a lot of pain that I was feeling. But I believe in this work. And it was very powerful, and I had an amazing healing process. I mean, I was, off crutches and walking. You start walking right away, but I was walking without a cane or anything within days. I think it was probably 7 days or something like that. But it was really amazing. And I just attribute that to, just putting all the positive energy that you possibly can into something that's going to happen to you where you're totally freaked out and have no control over what's going to happen.
Yep. And so you got yourself into as much control as you could.
Yeah, right.
By all the positive intent. That you went to, the positive intentions.
Yeah, and it turned out well. Yeah, it worked for me. Mm-hmm. But I can see where your deeper work and the, helping people in a hypnotic state to really sort out, how to let go of and rework a story that, because we, without that in the absence of facts, we kind of make up a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we do, don't we? We worry, we ruminate, we invent stories that may or may not really be true at all.
Right. And it's with hypnotherapy, you're, you know, helping people to create a different story because you can't really change what happened.
Well, that's the interesting thing, though, Nancy. This is what I was going to say.
Okay.
Is that so we were, you know, we've been doing this work for so many years from the point where nobody believed what we were doing. You said, how come there aren't more of us? Well, finally, I would say the world is scrambling, and I'm talking about the therapy world, the therapeutic world, neuroscience, psychologists, you know, nurses, everybody in the medical world, they're all scrambling to say, oh, no, they know talk therapy is not the therapy of choice. It's just they know it's kind of a failure. And now they're trying to invent what does work. So there's all these people coming up with ways that they go, well, you can do this. And everybody's writing it down. Oh, we can do this. Yeah, you can do this. Right. Oh, you've had success. Let's try this. But I am telling you that alchemical hypnotherapy has protocols that already have been putting it all together. And when you said you can't change the past, well, that is what we do. We do change the past. And the brain, again, has this amazing function where, just like a computer, if we go back to the computer, okay, so you go into the file because you've called it up with the name that you knew it, you called it up, you've changed it by writing new words, and you want to save the new file. So it just gives you this little question. Would you like to overwrite the old file? And with a keystroke, we overwrite it. Well, the brain works the same way. When it has two files, the one that really sucks, you know, because it was painful and awful and traumatic.
Yeah.
And then the new one that we've made with this new solution that's fun and maybe even funny and loving and, you know, puts us into bliss. The brain will automatically choose the wonderful one over the terrible one.
Right.
And so we can know that that did happen to us, but it takes out all the charge.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to have a session with you to really understand this on a lot deeper level, right? It's hard to, I'm here. I mean, you explain it extremely well. Yeah. I was wondering if you could take us out of today's conversation by reading about your grandmother that you so eloquently wrote in chapter 2 of Everybody's Talking at Me, External Characters. In your book, Talking to Myself, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head.
Thank you. And I guess what you're saying is we have spent almost a half hour talking, which is really amazing because I feel like we just got started. But here we go.
Well, thank goodness we're going to have more than one conversation, right?
Yeah. Yes. So, okay. And you tell me if I need to stop somewhere in the middle. Hopefully I get through the story. Okay.
No, go ahead and read the story in its entirety because we don't want to cut anything out. It's so good.
Okay. So it was a beautiful summer day in 1959 in Framingham, Massachusetts, a small suburban town 20 miles west of Boston. I was 5 years old and ecstatic to have my grandmother, who was visiting from New York, taking care of my 3-year-old brother and me while my father was at work and my mother was out shopping. To me, the world revolved around my grandmother. When people asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, my answer was always the same, a grandma. I was the first grandchild and the apple of her eye, but her 3 sisters all worried about one thing. They warned her when I was born, Mary, you have to clean up your language around the baby. Yet as good as her intentions may have been, she had many slip-ups. I followed her around like a shadow, and a lot of the activity of this day revolved around the little silver metal box that sat on our front porch. That was the box the milkman would open to find the empty bottles we left for him every couple of days and replace them with four new bottles of fresh milk covered with red checkered paper caps. The box was a perfect size for me to sit on, and the cool metal felt good in the summer heat as we waited there for him much of the day. My grandmother grew more and more aggravated as we returned to that spot repeatedly, hoping to find its prize inside, even though we knew we'd never heard the sound of his milk truck all day. When my father arrived home from work and found me sitting on my makeshift perch on the front porch, I wanted to greet him with our big news of the day. "The damn milkman never came," I innocently explained. I was shocked to see the anger rise in his face and have him pull me by the arm into the house and start spanking me. He said I was being punished for using bad language. I was just repeating what I heard my grandmother saying all day long. I did not understand what I did wrong.
And that pretty much sums things up very well with your grandmother and what you learned from her.
Yeah, and my dad. So let me just go one more paragraph if I can, because I kind of put it into perspective. I say, how easily children assimilate the voices of the adults in their lives as their own. I wasn't trying to swear like a sailor. I just wanted to be like grandma. My father's reflex action could even have been from the external characters' voices in his head of how his parents spoke to him when he was a child. How many adults who have children become amazed when they hear the same words coming out of their mouths their parents used on them and that they swore they'd never say when they had kids. We all know the lines. "Because I'm the parent, that's why. If you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to cry about. When you grow up, you'll understand. Or this will hurt me more than it hurts you." So I can stop there. I mean, obviously, I think people are getting the point.
Yeah, and hearing how the language that of your father in the way that you were raised.
Yeah, and that he thought it was something worthy of punishment. And I was just innocent. I was completely innocent. A little teeny girl just saying, you know, that's how people learn language. They use the words that they hear other people using.
And him making the assumption that you even knew what the word meant.
Right. Right. That I was saying a bad word, that I was doing something wrong. Yeah. You know, yeah. And how many of us, when you know, people sometimes think we parent bash when we say, "Oh, well, I'm the way I am because of my parents." It's like, it's not really their fault. It's just that we still need to heal ourselves from those things that they may not have known any better, but they did anyway.
I was once told that once I'm an adult at age 18, even though your brain isn't fully developed yet, that you have to stop blaming your parents for what's not right in your life, and you have to take responsibility for your life from that point forward.
Yeah, right.
No, that did not happen.
Right. Yeah.
Oh. But I mean, the message though that I took from that was, you know, the future of my life is my responsibility.
Yeah. There's a lot of people talking responsibility these days, but you know, I call a lot of it victim bashing. What happens to that little girl? You know, in alchemy, we pick her up and rescue her, and we tell her we're so sorry that happened to her. Is that not taking responsibility? You know, if somebody just says to you, "Oh, get over it," that doesn't help at all. That's when you could be in therapy for the rest of your life. You know, repeating the same story. But once you reach down to that little girl and say, "I'm so sorry that happened to you. Daddy didn't know any better." You know, do you want to give daddy a spanking to show him how it feels? You know, something like that. Whatever it is we have to do. Like I say, it's our imagination, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that changes everything. We can now take responsibility for giving that child the life she deserved.
Yes.
And the kind of parenting that she deserved. We don't have to keep, you know, bitching that our parents were, you know, wrong. We just do it right. We have a chance. So that's, you know, an old John Bradshaw statement is, it's never too late to have a happy childhood.
Oh my gosh, I read all of his books and I was so disappointed when his show like was off the air and I never really understood what happened.
Isn't that amazing? He just like disappeared and he was the first one to really bring up the idea of loving your inner child.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what happened to him? I'll have to look him up now that we've...
No, I guess he retired. He was always gray hair, right? He was old. I
mean, yeah, right, right.
I don't even know if he died. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll look him up and I'll post an update on the show notes.
Good. And okay. I think maybe you can go back to that great PBS, you know, series called The Family, because yeah, that would be worth watching.
Yeah, I have all of his books. Good. Okay. Well, wonderful conversation. And I just want to make sure, too, that I'm not in the camp of blaming the victim. But I understand how that comes across based on what I was told when I was 18.
Yeah.
I mean, you know where I'm coming from. All right. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks, Debbie, for being here and sharing your wisdom and a lot of history, too, that's bringing us up to speed on
And just know that people can get to me either by my name, DebbieUnterman.com, or the name of my book, Talking to Myself, plural.com.
Yeah, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head.
Right, that's the full name. But just talkingtomyself.com will bring up my website, too.
Okay, and I'll have all that information, too, in the show notes so that people can read about it and click right on the links right to your website.
Great.
Very good. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to learn a little bit more about master alchemist Debbie Unterman. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, photographer, brother from another mother. We'll see you next week.